everyone. I'm Emmeline Pat-Dahlstrom from Spacebase, a social enterprise focused on catalyzing the aerospace entrepreneurial ecosystem in New Zealand to solve challenges on Earth and beyond. You're listening to the Spacebase podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Miranda Satterthwaite, who is the Antarctic Academy Director at the International Antarctic Center. Miranda has multiple degrees in physical and biological sciences, psychology, and political sciences. Master's degree in business administration and education. In the past, she has worked for the Center for Earth and Space Science Technology, or ZERA, Lincoln University, and ARA Institute of Technology, to name a few. In this interview, we're going to learn about Miranda's career journey from ski instructor to space and STEM specialist. Welcome, Miranda.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good. So I guess to start, you're based here in Christchurch. Did you grow up here, and why did you settle in the region?
Absolutely. I grew up in the mountains of Canterbury. My father was the mountain director for Porter Heights, so he set up the Porter Heights Ski School. So I grew up with Austrian and Swiss coaches in the house, and I thought everybody skied and lived on mountains until I kind of got to high school and I realized that I was one of the only ones ski racing every weekend and in the mountains with ice and snow. I also spent my holidays growing up under the beautiful stars of Tekapo and the beautiful reserve there. So, yeah, I've been really lucky.
So tell us a little bit more how you transitioned from your passion about skiing to your passion about space.
So when you train in alpine skiing, it's pretty robust. There's a lot of physical training, a lot of psychological training. And so I became pretty interested in the sciences at high school and started off doing medicine, but really did want to pursue my skiing. So finished off a BSc in physical and chemical sciences and went to Austria and trained as a ski coach. I worked as a ski coach in Japan and the United States. I also worked in New Zealand for nzski.com, Cadrona at that time, and I was coach for the regional area. And I think in a lot of ways, I was really, really capable in sciences, but I wanted to put it into action. When I was in Japan, mainly, I started getting really involved in technology and spending more and more time up in the mountains. The stars really were of interest to me. I guess the biggest driver of behind getting into the curriculum with astronomy and physics was when I returned to New Zealand and got a chance to study law. It became obvious to me that we needed to grow pathways into careers that were as advanced as the ones I'd seen in Japan. And I got invited to work at Christchurch Boys High School to run the alpine sports there and also to teach physics and electronics. So it's from there that I really got into robotics, aerospace, and astronomy.
Growing up, were there people who inspired you as well, like teachers or people that you look up to that basically contributed to your career?
Yeah, I was really lucky to grow up amongst people that were aware of what was happening in the night skies from when I was really little. We used to camp up in the mountains and always point up at the different constellations up above Lake Tekapo. And I watched the development of the telescopes down at Lake Tekapo with great interest. I think also when I spend a lot of time in Japan, the stars are really important for the Japanese people. And we got a lot of hope out of that when the tsunami hit Japan. I lost a lot of really close friends. And, you know, astronomy became a really important thing because in some cultures, when you die, you become a star. And so I just had that incredible opportunity right through my life to be inspired by elders that knew about the stars, scientists and athletes that looked to the stars for inspiration, and the chance to go to countries like in Europe and Japan that had incredible technologies that were looking at the stars.
Wow. And if I think about all of the degrees that you've actually went through, it's so diverse, you know, from STEM to political science. What inspired you to actually be interested in all of these diverse, different, related, but not exactly connected?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you're involved in alpine skiing and you go to alpine ski racing events and you run them or coach at them, it's exceptionally international. So I've worked at the World Championships a couple of times. You've got countries from all over the world. And I guess it's through seeing that I became interested in, not just in the in the science of survival in extremes like this, the ski athlete has to do, but in the international relations required to get people to perform on site in a remote environment. When you set up these championships, you've got countries from all over the world getting top athletes to perform in a limited space under a short period of time, far away, remote from their homes. And that's really how similar it is when you deploy missions down to Antarctica, and at a further extreme, how it is when you deploy missions into space. So in a lot of ways, my studies sat alongside seasons. I would study as I was coaching. It was really only my first bachelor's degree in sciences, physical and chemical sciences, that was full-time. The rest of my other qualifications sat alongside pretty very busy coaching schedule with athletes. And for that reason, I continued to move into areas that I saw important for international relations and eventually for aerospace.
That's great. Fascinating. So you mentioned extreme environment, of course, and being involved with Antarctica. And today, you're focused on strategic business development and also education for Antarctic Center. So can you describe what does your job entail? Like, what is your typical day like?
So I'm the Academy Director for the International Antarctic Center. We've developed an academy because of the rapid growth of education into aerospace over Antarctica. So the reason for that is with COVID-19, there are a limited number of scientists needed on the ice. And so we do a lot of what's required on the ice now using satellite data. So we can use satellites to see the health of the seas, that's the phytoplankton. We can have some of our seals and whales tagged sufficiently so that we can see where they are, whether they're in the marine protected area or how they are in position to boats. We can use satellites for surveillance to see the depth of ice, the flow of glaciers, and also we can fly up a little bit closer and count penguins, for example. So with the polar orbit, we've got a chance in New Zealand to launch these satellites over Antarctica. And this is why this whole area of aerospace has become massive for our International Antarctic Centre. So a typical day for me would depend on the time of season. So if we are over the school holidays, we'd be running four different programs, for example, Antarctic Aerospace, which could include a mission to Mars, could be a mission to the moon, could be astronaut training. We run flight training. We run design and build of robotics. We design and build habitats. We have telescopes. We do astronomy. And each of these days would include a build. So if that were the school holidays, that would be the program we'd be looking at. Sitting on the side there on a school holiday, we would have Antarctic Explorer programs, which look at the heritage of Antarctica and how we survive as explorers. We would have penguin keeper programs and husky musher programs. In the term time, I have a lot of different groups that come in for 3 to 5 day camps for the Mission to Space program. And they, again, are training from everything from astronaut training through to habitat design and build, through to astronomy. We have a stellarium, which is inside star dome, and so we're able to show a lot about astronomy. So that will be happening in the weeks, or we'll be having one-day courses on extreme environments where we will teach people about glaciers, put them in the snow room, get them to meet the huskies and understand Antarctica with the 4D. So there's some great activities we can do. But if the time of season is days of ice, or the time of season is a development time for the local industry, often I'm involved in scientific diplomacy. That'll be planning for the meetings that happen around the Antarctic Treaty, setting up these meetings, running them, hosting the VIPs around Antarctica, hosting guests that come in through Antarctic Aerospace that consider Antarctica as a great place to do testing. So that's another key aspect of my role.
That's awesome. So what is the best part of your work?
I really love the scientific diplomacy. I'm really fortunate that I studied international law and politics on the side of my sciences. I find it really fundamental that we can look at the International Space Station and Antarctica as a model for how we want to run our planning for the planet in the future. I think that people are incredibly reciprocal and caring around the Antarctic Treaty model. And although it has got stretched in some aspects, it's a model for which we can use, for example, to look at when we go to another planet. It's not the model, that's probably the law of the seas will govern that, but I just find that side of it fascinating. But on the other side, I love seeing the joy in the eye of the students when their mind switches on to a career in aerospace, because they've built an aircraft, they've launched a rocket that they made, they've got dressed up as an astronaut, and suddenly they realise that they too could do Antarctic aerospace or space for New Zealand.
That's great. You also went on some very, really interesting flights to Antarctica recently. Can you tell us about that experience?
Absolutely. I've just come back from my third mission over Antarctica. The first two missions I did were with NASA SOFIA. Mm. So with those missions, we flew over with a telescope that sits outside slightly on the plane, and you can look at above the water layer in the atmosphere. You can look at infrared light, and you can see many things like nebula, biofootprints from Goldilocks planets. We've found evidence of water on the moon. So unable to fly with NASA SOFIA this year as they could not come back and run their missions, I was invited to lead the mission to the Aurora, which is the flight in the 787 over Antarctica just a couple of weeks ago. So in that, what we're looking for is we're looking for the amazing colourful patterns that are formed when the magnetic field lines and the solar flares coincide, and they excite oxygen, the outer electron on oxygen, to jump out. And when it jumps back into its ring, you get a great green glow. And the same happens with nitrogen, is more orangey, and hydrogen more of a pink. So we saw outside of the aircraft, we saw these wonderful waves and bands of light, which are the Aurora Australis. And we took that mission for maybe 10 to 11 hours over Antarctica and back to New Zealand. So I loved it because it was the first time that I could show the average New Zealander what we do when we do aerospace over Antarctica. They didn't need to be a NASA scientist or a specialised communicator to go up. They could be a guest from the public, and they could get to experience how amazing it is up in aerospace.
That's great. For the regular Kiwi, is there an opportunity to actually see auroras?
Yeah, so you can see aurora from the ground. The naked eye usually looks sort of a whitey green, and the problem is you've got the atmospheric pollution, wind, cloud, and the tendency for dispersion of light, so you can't see it so clearly. When you're up in the sky, just above the clouds even, you can see a lot clearer. And so you can do that. We were doing it only maybe 2.5 hours flight out of Christchurch. And we had our food relatively quickly so that we could pull down most of the shutters and then just look through, turn off the lights, and see the aurora quite clearly. So that is where you can see it from above. And to do that, you need to look at Viva Tours. They're the operators, fly in conjunction with Air New Zealand. And their next flight will be in September 2021. So far, they've got 2,000 people booked in.
Wow.
But we're going to keep running more flights for that. If you want to go midway, so up higher on the hills in Dunedin, I believe it's easy to see some aurora. We have had great photography of aurora at Tekapo. It does become an advantage if you've got a really good camera, because that will look for the colours of the light in the full spectrum at these higher points to see the aurora.
Great. So we're talking about Antarctica. New Zealand is one of the few gateways to Antarctica and is actually world-renowned for logistics and operational support for Antarctic activities. How do you correlate this future long-duration space activities and settlements on the Moon and Mars, and what do you think New Zealand's role will be because of already its experience in supporting a kind of extreme environment activities?
Right, from start to finish of a space mission, there are real similarities to an Antarctic mission. First of all is who you're going to take. The selection of personnel that can handle being away from home for a long period of time under extreme cold, isolation, maybe communication breakdowns, and still be a team player is really key. So when we run our mission to Mars or Mission to the Moon program here, we put all our students through astronaut code of conduct, and we also put them through astronaut selection to figure out who's going to lead the groups, to show you how important it is to train before you go. We also run training for Antarctica New Zealand here at the Antarctic Centre, so we can see those parallels. Secondly, about what you're going to take, and I think that we're really lucky in New Zealand that we've been able to prove that we can provide the materials for a number of logistical missions that head down to Antarctica, particularly the food and the first aid materials. I think a lot of similar materials to be able to handle surviving the clothes that are required for high radiation and extreme cold have been developed here in New Zealand. So we are sort of in the place in New Zealand to replicate that support we've had for Antarctica around what you take to look at how we can develop that for space. The third thing about it is logistical planning and deployment. So we have considerable experience about operating around a complex multinational centre here at the International Antarctic Centre, but then even more complex multinational destination being Antarctica, including how you get aircraft in compromised conditions, how you deal with search and rescue, how people can last there for a long period of time. That's very analogous to what happens in going to space. Mm-hmm. And finally, and most importantly, is the astronaut training that is required for going up to space can be simulated down in Antarctica, setting up for things that are being tested there. For example, we're testing robots and hydroponic systems and Mars analog systems and many other kind of sensor systems in Antarctica that can be analogous for space, yeah.
So the other part that I guess you're also focused a lot about is STEM education, and you've worked a lot with kids, especially for the Antarctic Center. Just personally, how important do you think is STEM education in getting the next generation to choose careers in space and science in New Zealand?
STEM education is absolutely fundamental. So I was very lucky to have a strong background in sciences before I really went to university, and was really capable and interested in physics and maths. And I've seen from my experience of going to the United States and visiting four STEM centres in the US. So I was trained in NASA Marshall Flight Center with Space Camp and in Kennedy Space Center to do the Mission to Mars program. I've also visited NASA Armstrong Flight Center and NASA Ames. And I've seen through those STEM programs there that they've managed to lift the capability of minority groups in particular out of sectors where they may have been overrepresented into the space industry and into engineering through effective project-based learning STEM. And so that really captivated me, because I believe that our Māori and Pacifica students have incredible hands-on capability in putting together and problem-solving. And then if we support that with STEM, particularly the M in STEM, that's the mathematics, then we can gain their confidence at years 5 to 8 in hands-on building, great things for aerospace. They'll get into the aerospace pathway, and then hopefully we can support them into jobs. But that's also open too for underrepresentation in engineering for females. We can get more females into STEM through providing exciting project-based learning with real-life mentors and give them a chance to get into aerospace. So I was inspired by what I saw in the United States at the STEM centres for NASA, and I was very keen to replicate aspects of that matched up to the New Zealand curriculum using New Zealand aerospace companies and New Zealand aerospace models to build our own aerospace industry here.
Great. And do you have any specific STEM programs that you can recommend to kids or students all over New Zealand that they should check out?
Absolutely. So we're running a range of STEM programs here around aerospace, from astronaut training to robotics, the mission to Mars, mission to the moon. And we plan on putting those online on the Children's University so that we can access remote students out in rural areas. We plan on working with Kaha Education to get it right out across Māori and Pacifica students. And we're also going to work really tightly with a range of aerospace companies to make sure our curriculum matches the innovations that are happening in the New Zealand aerospace sector, with acknowledgement to our international partners who are often spurring on the research for those companies.
And Of course, there's a lot of opportunities now in STEM in New Zealand, but do you see also any challenges that is occurring at the moment? And is there, do you have any ideas on how this could be improved?
Yes, when you look at the word STEM, there's another way of saying that word, and it's STEAM, and that is about putting the arts into it. The challenge of STEM is at the way it has been currently reached, it's been through, I guess, European classical understanding of science, and we're reaching a space now in Mātauranga Māori where we are understanding science through a more of a holistic, co-constructed way of learning. So the A in STEAM, which stands for arts, is a way of overcoming the challenges that I see with STEM. I see that we're not reaching those people that might struggle with numeracy or that are more hands-on, collaborative, constructive builders. So we need to make sure that we use the arts to draw more people into STEAM. So even if it's as great as them doing scientific learning, but their output might be an amazing craft activity or painting, or it might be some inspirational video. We're looking at running a video competition called Antarctica Over the Ice. It's been very successful, the STEAM approach. Last year, Rowley School, Desile 1, Māori and Pacifica School, won the Royal Society of Science video competition through taking this approach. So we're going to try it again this year to make sure that we activate those people that at risk of falling out of the STEM pathway using the A in STEAM, the arts. So we want to grab in more females that are interested. We wanted to grab in more Māori, Pacifica, more Indigenous people from all around the world to show that they too have a place in this industry of aerospace. They too have a place in a space to inspire other peoples, for space sits above us all.
So thinking about the future of aerospace and space in New Zealand, there's a lot of things that actually has happened over the past 3 to 4 years, and I'm assuming there's going to be a lot more that's going to happen in the next like decade. Where do you see the New Zealand space industry and community personally going in the next 5 to 10 years?
Strategically, the polar orbit is going to be increasingly important as world population grows. The globe heats and pressure comes on resources in the ice. We need to activate that polar orbit, obviously for security reasons, but we also need to be aware that keeping scientists off the ice means we're going to have to do a lot more work remotely from satellites. I think that New Zealand's sitting in the position to really assist this. We have laws that can be worked with easily to launch out of New Zealand. We have a number of universities that have excellent engineering and science schools and a highly innovative culture where we can adapt rapidly. We have the ability to bring in, I guess, resources or people if we're short of them. We've got a great interest in programming and electronics in all our tertiaries. And we've got a relatively stable and honest political system where innovation could really thrive. So by taking leadership over projects on the ice, which we've proven that we can do, we could easily take some great leadership in getting to people to collaborate around projects for space, to make sure that for the sake of humanity, for the survival of this planet, and for exploration to other planets, we have somewhere to launch from.
Awesome. That's really inspirational. So the last set of my questions really relate to your recommendations for our audience that's listening today. Do you have any favorite resources that you want to share, books or websites or people that you follow that could potentially inspire the next generation of space and aerospace in New Zealand?
We're in the process of developing online resources with Children's University, and we'll look at developing resources with Education Perfect and Science Alive. Just in the meantime, I am inspired personally by resources that I find from NASA. There's great, incredible resources around rocketry, mission to Mars, mission to the moon. It's all aligned well to the curriculum. The European Space Agency have incredible resources online, especially looking at habitat design, build, rocketry. We're really keen to partner with other companies around developing these resources for New Zealand. We've got great interest there from Dawn Aerospace to form a collaborative partnership around curriculum, and any other aerospace companies that want to join us. I have a master's in educational leadership and I have studied curriculum design, so we're in a position to really draw together these wonderful international resources, wonderful domestic knowledge from aerospace companies, and provide a great website and resources for schools in the future.
Great, thank you. I guess my last question to you is that directly for kids or students who want to be part of the space industry but just don't know exactly where to start, how do you think, or do you have any recommendations on what the first steps that they could do to be part of this space industry, or how to basically start their career path towards the space industry?
Totally. Come and join us anytime for any of our aerospace programs, either one-day holiday course or come and do a camp. If you're in remote regions, look out for what we can provide online through the Children's University, and by the end of the year what we put out across for free for all educators on Education Perfect. If you want to be inspired, go to your local airport in the remote regions where you are, watch aircraft take off. Go out and have a look at the stars. If you're in Tekapo, Mount Cook, if you're down in Stewart Island, have a look at the skies above and try to use some of the apps that you can get on your phone to match where we are compared to the southern skies. If you can get a chance to do subjects that will support you, for example, if you're in years 7 and 8, think about doing the astronomy badge from the Science Association. Think about entering science fair and enter something to do with astronomy or space. Invent something that hasn't been invented before. If you're in years 9 to 11, think about making sure that you engage in your science topics that involve space, physics, mathematics. And then if you're 11, 12 and 13, I really think you want to seriously consider keeping mathematics and physics going if you want to get into aerospace. And yes, we're going to need biology and chemistry too. And make sure you've got a subject in there that you can communicate well. You need to solve problems really, really well, really quickly, in situations you've never been in before in space, and that's going to be really important. But last of all, you need to do something that's going to teach you resilience, something that's going to teach you to stay awake all night if you have to watch the stars, that's going to make you cold, that's going to make you plan, that's going to make you stick together as a team player, even in adverse environments. So join a tramping club, or keep that hockey going, or join a ski team, or learn something new. And on your CV, you need to show that you've stuck with that you've pioneered, that you've done something amazing. We live in New Zealand. We live in the most incredible, extreme environment. You can prove that, and you can do it. We really believe in you as the future of aerospace.
Wow, that's so inspirational, Miranda. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and insights to the New Zealand space community and beyond. It was a pleasure learning from you. To our audience, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like our work and would like to support us, please check us out on spacebase.co. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.